This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This week on Into the Archives, another one, a great teammate of mine. Loved his energy. I played with him 1 year in Atlanta. My eyes, the greatest defensive center fielder in the history of the game. Oh, yeah, and by the way, he hit 400-plus home runs as well. Great player. Didn't make it into the Hall of Fame this year, 2024, but I think in the years ahead, I think you're going to see Andrew Jones eventually get to the Hall of Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Jones.
Sometimes you just need to enjoy a classic.
Join us as we go into the archives.
Hey, we going back.
And put our ear to the history books with this one.
This is Into the Archives.
Here's your host, Brett Boone.
Hey, Drew. Booney, hey man, I just want to say I appreciate you coming on, and it'll be fun. It'll be fun. My only teammate ever from Curaçao. No, that's not true. We had Randall Simon as well. But let's get it going with. All right, you played in Curaçao, grew up in Curaçao. You played in Japan and America. Now that's my only teammate that's played in all three. Baseball in Curaçao growing up. I know you signed it at the age of 16. Just to tell the audience out there in the Boone podcast, what was that like? It's a pretty unique situation in the game of baseball.
Well, I mean, you know, first, thank you for having me. You know, you one of my favorite teammates I play with, by the way.
Thanks, Drew.
We always made it fun.
Yes, we did.
We made it fun. Growing up in the island, it's totally different. I mean, just like everybody that come from, you know, Cuba, you know, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Curaçao is a little different. You know, it's kind of a little more, you know, you can say is, you know, baseball is not that big. It play all year long, but we don't play as much game that, you know, the guys play in Cuba or in Dominican Republic. Baseball always been big in Curaçao. I had stories from my dad telling me when they used to play against Cuba, and, you know, Cuba used to be a big rivalry against them, going through the Panama games and stuff like that. So he's always told me stories about how good baseball is in Cuba and how good baseball in Curaçao was with all the guys. But back in the day, they had the opportunity to sign to come to the United States and show their talent. So, through those years later on, you know, in the 90s, I think early 90s or maybe even in the late 80s, they start signing guys and guys start made it to the major league. And the first guy that made it from Curaçao from the major league was Hansel Mullins that made it with the Yankees. And he kind of opened the door a little bit and scouts start coming down there and they start signing a lot of guys. And, I had a chance and I always had a dream. My dream was to play on TV. You know, I told my mom since I was little, all I want to do is play baseball on TV. I wanted to play Major League Baseball, but when the opportunity came on, me and my family, we talk about it and, we made the decision. That's what I want to do. And, you know, I had to work hard on it and it paid off.
Yeah. And you know, usually the guests I have on, you know, I know them pretty well and I know your career. And after I retired, I continued to follow you. I appreciate you saying you're one of my favorites too. And we did have a good time in Atlanta, but I was just doing a little history check on Andrew Jones, things I didn't know. And at 15, correct me if I'm wrong, you played for the Curacao national team. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. I got a chance to play, you know, before they started having the professionals play and represent, you know, the United States in the Pan Am Games, like you mentioned, or in an Olympic year, they had the amateurs mm-hmm. play, and I got to represent the United States as a college player. You know, so I was 19 or 20 years old. I forget what it was. But matter of fact, I got to play in Cuba. That's for another segment, but it was a pretty unique situation. It opened your eyes, put it that way. But I got a chance to play, but I'm 19, 20 years old. I couldn't imagine, you know, playing on the national team, representing my country and being 15 years old. What was that like?
Well, I mean, that's all we want to do. I mean, I think, you know, growing up a small island, all you want to do is get an opportunity to leave and go on trip. You always want to come back because you love your island. You have your family there and all this stuff. But when you play a sport that you like, you love, and you get a chance to travel for it, you know, every kid will love to do that. So, you know, you get a chance to leave your country, go to a different country that you don't have opportunity all the time to go to, and play a sport and you know, experience different culture. You know, life changed for you, and that's all that we play baseball back home. That's all we want to do is just go to different countries that we don't have chance to go, like go to Puerto Rico, go to Cuba, go to Panama, go to Dominican Republic, to the Bahamas, or you know, whatever they play the tournaments in the Caribbean. Go and represent your country and trying to win a gold medal.
How'd you get discovered?
Well, I got discovered by this scout that was working for the Braves back in the day in Curacao. His name was Giovanni Vicesa. He signed probably like five guys before me. And you know, I was one of those kids. You know, I was never go to the tryouts because I felt like, you know, it's too many guys. It's not, you're not going to show up, you know, you're not going to get seen much. But, you know, this time I did it and you saw what I did. They saw, you know, my talent. They liked what I was doing. And they brought the big guy from Atlanta. And then I did a special tryout with just him and another guy that was signed with the Braves. And they liked it. We sit down and we discuss what we want to do, and I agreed to sign with him.
Well, I'll tell you what, and this is long before we played together, but I remember where I was when I first saw you play, and you're just a kid, and I remember turning on the World Series. You're 19 years old in the big leagues hitting home runs, and I remember, you know, thinking, who is this kid hitting homers in the World Series? You know, at 19, what was I doing? I was a sophomore in college playing in the Pac-10, and you're hitting homers, you know. And I think, you know, nowadays they're trending back to that, the big leagues. You're starting to see more and more young talent. But in the time you came up, that really wasn't the norm to come up at that age. There weren't too many guys that did what you did. I think of Ken Griffey Jr., you know, he came up at I believe 19 as well. You know, modern day guys
the game is changing, and you know, the guys getting more advanced. They're getting more opportunity. Back in the day, you're 19, you're probably not going to get that opportunity to show out and get to the big stage. They're going to keep you slow. They hold you down, make you graduate every level, till they know that you are ready to go up. So now it's like, you know, I see guys move from A ball to big leagues. You know, I see guys go from AA to big leagues. Back in the day, it was rare. But Booney, I go back to it. You see me play. We play you. You were with Cincinnati when I played you the first time in Fulton County, I think. You were with the Reds.
I just remember I was on a hunting trip, and it was in and I turned on the postseason, and I remember, well, maybe that's the time when you really like made an impression on me. It kind of hit me like, this kid's 19 years old. He's hitting homers.
Boone, I didn't impress you when I hit two home runs against Smiley in Turner Field. When
I'll tell you what, man. A lot of brain cells have gone. But no, I really remember that time because I remember talking to my dad and said, look at this kid. And was overly impressed with it. But no, I don't really. You took Smiley deep twice? What, were you 18 then?
Drew, your memory's
better than mine.
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm a little younger than you.
You are a little younger than me. And I got a chance in my career to play with some pretty great center fielders. Played with Junior when I first came to the big leagues. I played with Mike Cameron. I played with you, and I played with Torrey Hunter. And I was just having this conversation. Cammy's still, you know, good friend of mine, and we talk time to time. And he's always asking me about stuff. And I said, yep. I said, Cammy, you're one of the best I've seen. I said, there's only one guy that I'd take over you defensively in center field, and that's Andrew Jones. And he agreed with me. I said, there's you. I put you, Torrey. I'm talking Cameron now. I said, Mike Cameron, Torrey Hunter, and Griffey. All great, great center fielders. I said, but I put Drew one step above you. And when we played together in 99, I saw it every day. And you played a real shallow center field, but you know, I'd been told enough by your biggest fans, which were Smoltzy, Glab, and Doggy. They talk, Andrew Joe, he saves us a lot of runs. But I got to see it on a daily basis. Talk to me a little bit about how you played center field, because I know you played a shallower center field than I've seen other center fielders play. So speak a little bit to that.
Well, be honest with you, back in the day, we didn't have that much of a scouting report. We have to make our own adjustment as what we see, what our pitcher have today. You have to, how are we going to attack the hitter? But you have to have your own adjustments as when it's two strikes or when it's, when he's ahead or when he's behind the count. You just move yourself and put yourself in the right position. You know, I'm sure you did it when you were playing second base, to get a batter range where you have ideas. Say, I think this guy's going to pull the ball. So I will cheat a little bit, but it won't be that obvious that you're going to see me move. So you just move yourself. You know, you basically work hard at it, first of all. You do your practice. You do your work that you need to do. Started from sprint training. You go there. You get life BP, and you just say, today I'm going to play really shallow. Tomorrow I'm going to play deep and see how I work on the wall, the feeling of the wall or whatever, coming in or going back. So everything started sprint training, and then you continue to do it in the season. And, you learn the hitters, you learn the league, and you learn your pitchers. And that's how I made it be as easy as I could have made it for myself.
Yeah, and you hit on a good point. Yeah, as a middle infielder, we did all those things too. It made it nice that the year I did play in Atlanta with you guys, it makes it nice when you got Maddux and Glavine, because when they call a pitch, you know where it's going to be. So it's pretty predictable that your guys are missing in and out like normal starting pitchers. But that's definitely – that Braves group that you played with for a number of years, it seemed like it was Maddux, Smoltz, Glavine, and then it was Chipper Jones, Andrew Jones, and pretty much maybe Javi Lopez. And the rest of us were kind of interchangeable parts. It seemed like guys were always coming and going to Atlanta to get that perfect formula. You won a decade, you won the division every year. I was talking to Greg the other day, and I said, is there any disappointment? You only won one World Series. They won in 95. And he said, but it was nice knowing when you walk into that clubhouse in spring training that you're going to be in the postseason. Speak to that a little bit about what it was like. Because it was you, it was Chip, Javi, and then the big three on the mound. And what was that like for your time in Atlanta?
Well, I mean, you say it right. You know, like I say, I would love to win more World Series, because that's what it made, you know, the Braves the team. But going there, like you say, going there knowing that you're going to be in the playoff every year, when you walk into spring training, the first word Bobby say, hey, we're just going to get ready to get and win another title. That's it. That's the goal, go win another title. But, you know, through the year, years are long. You know, you're going to have ups and downs. You're going to struggle. The team's going to struggle. We have to have a meeting to talk about, you know, hey, we need to step it up a little bit. We need to do a little bit of that. But those things happen with everybody. Everybody's going to have an up and down year with the season going. But to respond to that, why we did not win that many, we always was like short one person. I felt like we were short one person every year. If it was like an arm or it was a bat. So it was like, or somebody in the bullpen. So we always was like one short over. And, you know, I think that's why we couldn't get over that hump. But, you know, a lot of respect for the front office of the Braves. They always put a good team together to go out there and compete for 162 games. And, you know, and you can see it pay off through the 14 straight division titles. But it always was like one part. It's like, why we cannot get it over the hump. And I felt like we always was missing one person. You know, the year that we trade for you and Reggie, we had a great team. We was like maybe one person short. I don't know if it was an arm or a bat, but it always was like one of those things. But, you know, you look like now, you know, every team, when they start, they the teams that win the whole World Series, they compete from the beginning all the way to the end. I mean, they solid. I mean, you name it, name all the teams that won the last 5 years of a World Series. I mean, they have great pitching staff and they hit and they do the right thing. So I felt like we always was one player short to make it to the World Series.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and you make a good point, because it was a different spring training that year I was in Atlanta than any of my previous. We walked in and Bobby addressed the team and he addressed the new players. And he said, in for you new guys, you know, we strap it on and we steamroll people. And that's what we do when we go to the postseason and we're the Atlanta Braves. And there was kind of an aura in that clubhouse. Like, yeah, we expect to go to the World Series. And we ended up going that year that I was there. We got beat by the Yankees, but it was a different, different than the other teams I've been on, yet it was, I really welcomed it because I thought it was a really cool, I mean, it breeded just such a winning atmosphere. And I'll tell a little bit of a story. And speaking of Bobby Cox, who, you know, the Hall of Fame manager, and I don't know if you'd heard it before. I'm sure you've heard it before, but this is attributed a little bit to how great of a defender you were in center field. Is you made a play one day, and it was just one of your typical plays. And I remember we came into the dugout, and Bobby kind of looked around, and somebody said something like, "Hey, Drew made a great catch." And he just kind of looked, I forget who he was talking to, but he just said, "Willie Mays my ass." And I thought, wow, that's one of the highest compliments you can pay to a player. And I heard him say that. And I never saw Willie play, but seeing you play every day, it was pretty fun to watch. All right. So after the Braves, move on. You bounce around a little bit, like us coming to the Braves, those interchangeable parts. You go to the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Rangers in Chicago. What was that like? What was that like after kind of being a mainstay in one city, and probably, if I'm guessing, you probably called the Braves your home, to then be on the move and playing on different organizations? What was that like?
Well, be honest with you, it was tough. I'm not going to lie to you. It was tough the first time when Cheryl was coming to the office and told me, "Hey, we're not going to be able to sign you back." And I was like, it was a shock to me because, my heart was in Atlanta. I made Atlanta my home. So I was like, I was in shock. Kind of felt like, a little disappointed that they didn't even offer me nothing to say, "Hey, we want to bring you back on this or whatever." They didn't offer nothing. So they just simply told me, we're not going to bring you back because we don't have money. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to say anything else. Say thank you for having me, you say you're always going to be a Braves. The whole story is that normally every GM will tell you. But I was a little disappointed, but then I had to move. And then, I went to LA. It was not one of my favorite year of playing baseball. I know I had some bad years through my career playing with the Braves, some up and down season, but I managed to go through it. But I went to LA, tore my meniscus. I woke up one day, I don't know, I just couldn't walk. I was like in shock to myself. But, tore my meniscus. So that took me for a while to come back, trying to make a rehab because we were very competitive trying to make the playoff. And, and then they had young guys that was almost there ready to go. And, the Matt Kemp, the Itier, and all those guys, I was like, I'm just going to take a break, make sure my knee is right, and let these kids go out there and play. And they went out there and play, and, they traded for Manny. Manny did a great job for them going there. They may end up making the playoff, but they lost against the Philly. But that was the most disappointing years of my career playing baseball, my whole career, period. Injury came in. Never had injury, never sit out a game. I always play every day. When I walk in, I'm playing till he say, "You're not playing today," or "I'm taking you out of the lineup." So that was my mindset. So it was kind of disappointing to myself, as my career of not playing every day and not going out there and help my team win. Then I had to make a move. And, I asked for my release. The Dodgers released me. I went, I rehabbed my knee. I went to Dominican Republic, played some game down there, so make sure I can run and do the right things that I need to do. And then I signed a minor league deal with Texas. And, I went to Texas, and they basically say, "We don't have a spot for you." And then I was like, no problem. I went down to the minor league and got some at-bats. And actually, Nolan Ryan was there. And he was watching the AAA team, and I had four homers. So he called my agent back and said, "Hey, don't leave. We might find a spot for you." So
only four.
This is like after Juan Washington and Gary Perry tell me that, "Drew, we don't have spots for you." I mean, the manager told me already that we don't have spots. I was like, "No problem. I still got a day. I'm gonna go down there and get some at bat. Maybe some team will watch me." So Noah Ryan saw this, and they called back and said, "Don't leave." And I end up making a team, and I end up being a part of the team. And it was a good beginning for Texas because we have fun. We made everybody very excited. We brought a lot of excitement to the team. And after that, the next 2 years, they went back to back World Series. And it was a beginning of a good start for them. But then I went to, and after that I went to Chicago. I signed over there. I was talking with Ozzy that I played with him. It was my teammate and a good friend of mine. He told me, say, if you come in shape, you're going to play outfield. I said, okay. So I went, I worked out. I got really fit, lost some weight, came there, you know, got a chance to play, you know, then they went and trade for Manny and, you know, I had to go to the bench. And then, you know, after that, I ended up winning 2 years with New York. And my last 2 years professionally, I went to Japan and ended up playing for Rakuten Eagles in Japan. And we won the Japanese series over there.
How was that? How was that? And now you've played, you know, you played the big leagues for a number of years. Grew up in Curacao. Now you're playing in Japan. You're going from culture. Tell me a little bit what Japan was like. Still to this day, I've never been there.
Booney, let me tell you something. One of my favorite places to go. It's
really?
Just too far. But one of my favorite, the respect, the culture, the love of the game. I mean, they treat you like you're the king over there. Like, especially, I had a name already from playing the major league. When I went there, it was like, I mean, it was... I almost did not pay for anything over there. It was like free.
Yeah,
everything. You go eat, you free. Like, and we were playing good. I was with a new expansion team that never went to the playoff. We ended up winning the playoff. We won the series. We brought the series, and you know it was a good town. I don't know if you remember the whole tsunami thing that happened. In Japan was in that town that I play in. And we did a lot of stuff for them. We donate so much money. You know, every time, you know, we hit a homer, we will talk about, hey, if we hit a homer, we will donate money to the foundation for the tsunami recure and everything. So we had a great time, and we end up winning. And, you know, thanks for Tanaka was our ace player. I mean, our ace pitcher. And Casey McGee was my teammate. That was a big part of the team. So we end up having a great time, very fun, and we went out there and won the whole thing.
Yeah, it sounds cool. And you know, I played with Ichiro for 5 years, and he'd tell me all about it. And in 2001, when 9/11 hit, that was the year we were on the schedule to open the big league season in Japan. But then, you know, they took precautionary and for our safety, they said, we don't think it's a good time to fly over there. But I've always been interested, and I hear I hear stories about it, but I think it would be a cool thing to go through and just experience.
My thing is, I went there in 1989 to play a Little League World Series in Japan. Since then, we end up staying with family. They took us in open arm. They went out to learn a different language to speak with us so they can make us feel comfortable. So that was crazy. So then after that, you know, I went to two All-Star game with the MLB All-Star game to Japan. I went in 98 and 2006. When MLB used to have an All-Star game that go there every year after the end of season, and I enjoy every bit of it.
Really cool. That's really cool stuff. I want to get back to a little bit on because I think it's something that we have in common, even though we played a different position. Me being a second baseman my whole career, it was, man, the years that were easy for me were the years that I really had a shortstop that we worked good together. When I was in Cincinnati, you know, which comes to mind, I played with Barry Larkin for 5 years, and it just seemed like we just knew each other, and we knew where the other guy was going to be, and it just freed you up to play your game and to make great plays because you trusted your opponent. I think a little bit when I think of center fielders, and you, like you said, after you left Atlanta, you played for several different teams, and you're playing with a lot of different outfielders, a lot of new left fielders and a lot of new right fielders. Talk to me about being a center fielder and the adjustments you make to the outfield you're out there with. Does it make that big of a difference for a center fielder, or does it help when you really know those guys in left and in right?
I mean, it's good that you know the guys that you have because you communicate with them all the time, but it really doesn't matter for me who's in right or left. I'm going to move and I'm going to put you in the spot that I think that it's going to be comfortable for you, and you won't be in my way when I go get the ball or whatever. So, and when I play center field, I was always shifting. I was shifting left. I was shifting right. It depends the hitter who's the hitter was. I will move in a little bit. I will bring the right field in. I will bring the right field back. I mean, I was kind of like quarterback. I was feeling it like it was crazy. I was just like telling guys where to go, and the ball would be like right there. I was like, they would look at me. It was like, how you knew that? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just watching the game. So it was kind of weird. Matt Dyess was not a good outfielder, and I meant Mike Dyess made a lot of money because he can hit, but I made him a good outfielder.
Very cool. Very cool.
So the, you know, it was like so crazy. I don't know what, you know, even now I go to spring training, you know, I work with the Braves. I go to spring training, I talk with the outfielders. I get an outfield and I get behind them and I'm like, I move and I'm like, hey, this ball is going to be right here. I'll be moving stuff. And it's just like, kind of like I see it out there, and it's just like put myself in a position where I can go left and right quicker, or, you know, or whatever. So it's, you know, it's just something you just see when you get on the field.
What do you think's cooler, your Gold Gloves, Silver Slugger?
Well, I'm going to be a little political on this. I should have won more Silver Slugger. But
I should have won more Gold Gloves.
I should have won more Silver Slugger. But I love defense. I think I made defense so much special for my career, and I took a lot of pride of it. Not that I never took pride of my hitting or anything else, but you know, I felt like if I fell as hitting, somebody else could have picked me up. You know, the fifth, the third, the second, or the eighth hitter picked me up if I don't do it. But if I fell as a defender, I can make something big happen in the inning. So I took a lot of pride of that.
Yeah, I think that's really cool too, because that's something you do as a player. Do you take pride in your position? And I always used to think that way, especially as I got a little bit older and been through some up and downs and some tough years on the back of that bubblegum card. And I just, yeah. I took the mindset of, you know what, if I'm not getting any hits today, you're not going to get any hits either. And it kind of makes you feel better. If I could turn a big double play to end the game, at least I did something. You know, you run one down in the gap in the bottom of the ninth, save the game. It's like, I didn't get any hits today, but I can hang my hat somewhere. So I think it's cool. And I think that's why defense is such a, you know, it's not that glamorous thing that, you know, you don't have the numbers and you're not on SportsCenter flipping your bat, but it's a pretty cool thing to, just that you know, and you, yeah, and your teammates know.
Well, you know, everybody asks you about a lot of stuff. It's like, hey, you know, what about, you know, with this whole, you know, Hall of Fame thing and you know, everything about your career. I say, listen, if those things happen, it's great. It's just accomplished. But all I want is my teammates that I play with, when they look back and say, that guy was a badass, and he helped me where I am right now. So that's all I look for. And if it happened to be in the Hall of Fame, it happened. I've been there. I will be there. But if it don't, you know, I won't hang my head down, because it is what it is. But I know that when I put the uniform on, I give all I got to go out there and be the best player I can be at my position.
And I think you hit it on the head. You say it's what it's all about. It's that teammate can look at you and respect what you did, and hopefully you touched other teammates and make them better players. It is. That's what it's all about. I mean, all of us are human beings and we play this game, but at the end of the day, your teammates know what kind of guy and what kind of player you are, that you bring it every night. And that's the most important thing. And that doesn't get headlines, but you're right on with that. 2005, you hit 51 homers, Drew. 51. That's a big number. Mm-hmm. Not too many people hit 50 anything. What was that year like?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I think 04, I only hit like 20-something homer. I felt like, you know, I felt like I failed that year, you know, producing. You know, I had a good streak going, hitting 30-something home run with 100 RBIs, 30-something home run with 100 RBIs, score 100, whatever. And 04, I fell. I felt like I fell. So I went right when the season was over, I went right straight to the batting cage and I started working on new stands and trying to develop less movement of the body, trying to be more solid to the ground. And, you know, it clicked. And I went to spring training and I went off. I was like feeling great. I was like, man, I'm going upper right now. I'm gonna take this guy home run upper field, and it happened. So I was like, wow, I feel good. So I'm comfortable with my stand, my new stands, and everything. So all I have to carry into the season, but anything happened. I started bad. April was terrible. I was like, I had like one homer. Everybody was like, you left all your home runs in freaking spring training.
Then all of a sudden, here they come.
But then everything click up and everything start rolling. And, you know, I kind of start sitting on pitches. And, you know, when they throw it, I did not miss it. And I felt like it was that good of a year.
Today's game, you watch these kids today, you say you work with the Atlanta Braves. What do you think? It's all about spin rate and exit velocity and hitting homers. You're seeing guys strike out a lot. I think there's a lot of positive things. I think that still the great players are great players. It's fun to watch, you know, for me, it's fun to watch a Mike Trout. It's fun to this Tatis kid down in San Diego, man. Mm-hmm. He's got a chance to be just a superstar. What do you think about mm-hmm. today's game versus when our generation?
Well, I mean, it's tough. I mean, we can go back so many generation back. Baseball is just continue to grow. I mean, it's going to continue to get as fast as they can. I mean, back in the day, it was like, I don't know how many guys would throw 100. Now everybody's throwing 100. So I really don't know what's going on. But, you know, it's fun. I'm happy for them. I mean, I'm happy that, they're giving a lot of kids opportunity to go out there and show their talent. Because like you say, back in the day, you won't see a 19-year-old or 21-year-old kid in the big league. That many of them, you know, it was tough. You know, you're going to have the 27, you know, the 27, the 26-year-old guys that it will be in the big league. So, you know, get an opportunity to get those kids early to get on there and then show their talent is awesome. I mean, I love the game. I can speak of the difference of it because, you know, we're in 2020. I play in 2010. You know, it's not much different. But, you know, it's a lot of information now. And I kind of hurt a little bit because they forgetting the instinct of the game.
I couldn't imagine you checking your wristband.
I'm pulling a piece of paper out of my back to look what's going on. I don't know if I don't know about that part, but the information they gave you is fine. I told you I love them. Give me information, as much information I can have on the pitcher. It's awesome. You know, I mean, they tell you now this guy is going to throw 80% slider and 20% fastball. Should I look for fastball for 20%? I'm going to look slider for 80%, right?
Yeah, right.
So the information is right, but you're going to still make your adjustment yourself because you got to see the game. This is just something on the paper they give you. Just like the paper tell you, this guy is going to hit the ball over here 80% or 60%. That's why you see, but you don't see what the swing is going. So you got to watch all that. And, you know, now they got two guys playing so deep. They don't want balls to go over their head. It's so much stuff, information. It's just like, I don't know. It's kind of it bothered me because I see guys hit blooper and get doubles, and nobody can turn nobody out at the base. So it's like, I just don't understand that. I'm like, guys, you they gave you information. It's fine. Use it, but you still use your instinct. Use your instinct of the game. And I think that's what we're losing in this now game now. And that's the only thing I will say about back in the day and this game, the instinct of the game. Some of the guys, the guys that use the instinct, you can see them. They superstar. They use the instinct. They good defender. The guys that lose the paper, they just all right baseball players. So I think the things that we miss in nowadays baseball is the instinct of the game. They're not using it. They're going more as a robot. They told me to move there. I'm gonna go there to that spot.
Right. No, and I agree with you on that. And I try to look at the positive of everything. I think there's a lot of positive things. You know, and I think as baseball players and ex-baseball players, to stay in the game and to stay relevant, you've got to look at what the younger generation's doing. Because there's probably some things we could learn. Like you said, man, I would love having all this intel that they have right now. Right on my laptop, I can go over an entire team the night before I even get to the ballpark. I think I'm almost jealous that I didn't have that kind of information at my fingertips. Mm-hmm. But like you were pointing out as well, it can be an overload. And you start to rely on that instead of relying on what got you to the big leagues. When you say 80% sliders, well, does that guy know what happened the last time he hung me a slider and I hit it in the upper deck? Probably he's not going to throw me a slider 80%. Or who's hitting behind me? What's the situation in the game? Is there a base open? You know, all these factors come in, and it's not just 80%, 20%. It's no, we got all these factors, and now I'll use my instinct to find out what the best approach is for me. So, yeah, I think there's really good things, but I think there's things from past generations, and somehow if you mold those together, that's the perfect baseball player. But that life will go on, and it's their game. I enjoy watching these young, talented kids. I love watching this kid in Washington, Soto. How good of a hitter is he? Mm-hmm. And the guys like that,
he's awesome.
The talent is really – the physicality is improving. And I think it's the way these guys prepare and year-round. Yep. They're in the gym when they're 15 years old. You know, I didn't do stuff like that. I didn't start getting in the gym until I was in my late 20s. So,
Yep. I mean, you say, you know, the information, the work active is different than it was now. And, you know, I embrace all those kids. I mean, I'm proud of all of them. To get the chance to play in the major league, you know, something they all dream about as at a younger age, and it don't happen a lot. So, you know, they need to enjoy it, embrace it, and take advantage of it.
You still keep in contact with Randall Simon?
Be honest with you, I just talked with him before your phone call.
Oh, it came up on I don't know, Facebook or something I was looking at the other day, the old back in Milwaukee when they had the sausage race. And there's Randall coming out of the dugout, knocks the sausage. It's still one of the funniest things I've ever seen on a baseball field. And it helps once you get to know Randall and play with him. And I know you're good buddies with him. You grew up with him, but just that one year I got to play with Randall, to see that he was the guy that came out of the dugout. I mean, it makes it even funnier. What a good, you got a Randall story for me?
Oh man, to be honest with you, he is that nice of a guy, to be honest with you. He is a very nice guy. My funny story to him is, you know, he always act like he's tough, right? You're always popping his chain out, you know, you're always popping, you know, this and that. So we get in trouble in instruction league, and they call us to the office, and they send us, they say, you guys broke the rule, we're going to send you home. And this big teddy bear started crying like a little baby. I was like, what in the world is going on with you, man? Man up, please. We want to go home. I don't want to be in instruction league. It's hot. You're playing at 12 o'clock. I want to go home. So he was, that's the point he's saying. He was so tough, like, you know, Chulo, Bravo, blah, 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 this and that. And now we're sitting in the office with the boss. He's crying like he's going home.
Oh, he cracks me up. And he'll hit me up once in a while. I'll hear from him, you know, once every few months. And I just think back to, you know, watching him hit BP and get off me, ball. And it just takes me back to some fun times. Yeah. Drew, I appreciate you coming on, man. This was a lot of fun. I was glad to catch up. And on the Boone podcast, what we do at the end is we bring Big Danny back, and he's got some questions from the fans.
Thanks, Brett. We do have a couple questions from the fans, and we'll start it off with this one. Andrew, do you have a good Ozzie Guillen story? Considering I'm a Chicago guy, you played for the White Sox, and you also were friends with him on and off the field. Any good Ozzie Guillen stories?
Wow. I mean, I don't know where to start, to be honest with you. This guy is a character. I actually love this guy, man. I wish they could have had a chance to give him a chance to manage him again, because I think he's a great manager. He always was there, you know, on the back of Bobby, learning on what to know about managing and stuff like that. So I wish they can give him a chance to manage again. And, you know, but to be honest with you, this guy is a character, man. I mean, I don't know where to start. You know, we played winter ball together in Venezuela. When I was 19, he probably was in late 20s. He came up with me one time. He said, "Hey, Andrew, if you don't want to play here, just go home." I say, "Well, can you tell them so I can go home? Because I don't want to be here." But anyway, story from him. Shoot. I don't know where to start. I mean, as a manager, you want to know stories of him as a manager or
I want to know. I want to know the funniest thing that made you laugh with that guy.
All right. So I'm playing against them in Chicago. I'm with the Yankees. He sent a ball over to Giardi. "Please put Andrew Jones in the game so we can finish the game faster." So he throw the ball. Giardi get it. He laughed. He called me. Giardi say, "Andrew, you pinch hit." And I was like, "Wow, are you serious? Come on." So I'm walking in the back and say, "I bet I'm getting a hit on my walk." So now the pitcher is Chrisell now. Chrisell is nasty. So I'm facing Chrisell off the bench. He's coming in to close games or whatever. He's going, "Oh, clean up, whatever." I'm getting there. I look over. I say, "Bet. We bet. Dinner if I get a walk or a hit." He say, "You pay if you strike out." Chrisell is just, you know, Chrisell putting people down left and right. So he end up walking me. I mean, I went basically win there because I know Chrisell from the year before. I played with him in Chicago. I know he was not going to throw me fastballs. He was going to throw all sliders. So I was just taking pitches the whole time. I took five pitches. I didn't swing the bat once. So I walked. He gave it. He's raising hell, throwing hats out there. So we go out and go talk with Sale. Say, "Sale, you need to pay for the dinner that you cost me for Andrew, because we bad dinner with him." So we in the middle of the game, he laughing. I mean, this guy is the funny person that I have fun with a lot of managers I had, but the fun I had with Ozzie, because, you know, he was a friend, an ex-teammate, and a really good friend, family. It was fun to play with him, though.
He's awesome out here. I'm actually pretty good friends with his son, and when I used to cover the White Sox, he would do a thing in the dugout before the games, but the media would we'd all, you know, ask him questions, and then when he was done, he goes, "All right, now everybody turn off your recorders and I'll be as honest as you want me to be." So we all had to show him. Yeah. We had to show him that I turned off the microphone, and then he would be the most honest manager I've ever heard in my life. Everything was off the record, but it was like all stand-up comedy. He was like the greatest to cover.
He's not afraid to speak his mind.
No, not at all. With that said, you've played in so many different big markets, L.A., Chicago, New York, Atlanta. Which was the hardest one to play in?
L.A. was tough as well, because they were on my butt the whole time, because I didn't perform for the money that they pay me. So that was tough. But I had a good time in New York. New York was awesome. Organization-wise, New York, very top everything. New York is New York. I mean, the Yankees is, you know, it's top of the line. You can ask Brad Boone brother how they are. So, they top of the line with their stuff. So that was the best organization I played for. As from top to the bottom, nothing wrong against the Braves. Braves gave me the opportunity to play the longest. I respect everybody on there. But organization-wise, handle-wise, the Yankees.
Gotcha. Before I let you go, the fans want to know, do you have any good stories of John Rocker?
Oh, man. Wow.
That's triple.
I mean, I got about 10,000. You want me to speak them all?
Hey, I got the time. If you got the dime, buddy.
Okay, I'm going to go with this one. It's not in the big league. We in A ball. He is my roommate. I'm living with him in his mom's house and dad house. He drive us to the stadium every day. He drive me and Glenn Williams to the stadium every day because we didn't have driver's license yet. So we drive for the game, come back. This fool decide to go off-road on the way home to chase deers in the wood with us. On the way home, went off-road in the dark. We don't know what's going on in the dark. I have no idea. I thought I don't know what the hell was going on. Not a story.
That sounds like him, and that sounds like something Klesko might do too.
We play, well, Danny has changed the truck to a Corvette. We're doing 120 on the back road. I'm like, are we going to die? This guy was out of control. On the second, though, this is all A ball. Now, I'm telling you, I mean, I got a lot for the big leagues or whatever. But A ball, me and him was living together. True story.
That's awesome.
We go on the road. His dad had to go to the road every time because when he was a starting pitcher. Every time he couldn't throw strike worth nothing. I mean, boy had a good arm, but could not throw strike. He was throwing the ball in the backstop. So the fans from the area will come and hassle him. So he get out of the game. He's trying to fight the fans on the way to the clubhouse when he's getting out of the game. He's yelling in the stands. His dad have to go get him. He's yelling at the fans. I'll wait for you in the parking lot. Now, meet me out there. I mean, boy had a big temper since from the beginning. Don't get me wrong. I love John Rucker. He was a great guy. He still is a great guy. But he had a temper, and he is borderline crazy.
I've always said sports always needs a guy like that. You need like a heel or somebody who takes people on like that. That's what makes it fun. There's not a lot of guys like that anymore.
I'm telling you. I mean, it's still a lot. It's still a few out there. They're just not as wild at that no more because there's so much media out, and it can cause a problem. You know, back in the day, it was no Instagram, no Snapchat, no none of these Twitter stuff.
No video phones.
People can, you know, video calls or whatever. So now it's more stuff. So everybody needs to be a little calm about the situation.
He is Andrew Jones. You can find him on Twitter at AndrewJones25. Drew, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you coming on and having a good conversation. We appreciate it, man.
Thank you for having me, guys. I enjoy it. Anytime.
This has been the Brett Boone Podcast. You can follow Brett at TheBoone29. And this has been the Brett Boone Podcast. Thank you all for subscribing. Thank you all for reviewing it, sharing it, leaving comments. This podcast is continuing to grow, and it's all thanks to everybody. Please continue to tell all your friends and family. This is where real baseball talk happens. It happens on the Brett Boone Podcast. My name is Dan Levy. We'll do it again very soon. We'll talk to you guys soon. Take care, everybody.
2400 Sports is an Odyssey company.